17 minutes now before 8 o'clock. I'm Lisa Lacco. This is The Great Northwest here on CBC Radio 1 on your Friday morning, the 9th of January. Well, when Duncan McKinley was just 7 years old, he already knew he had a secret. He was somehow different from most people, but it wasn't until he was 19 that he was finally diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome. Today, Duncan McKinley has a doctorate in psychology, and he's recognized as the world expert in Tourette's. He's in Thunder Bay this weekend to speak with educators and Tourette families. Joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Morning.
Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So, okay, let's talk about the secret that began when you were 7 years old. What did you notice at the time?
Sure. The very first thing I noticed, actually, oddly enough, I was in a van with my father and a bunch of his friends, and we were off on a road trip together. And I developed, in retrospect, what was an involuntary movement within my bladder muscles, basically clenching my bladder muscles. And at the time, I'm 7 years old, I just say, wow, I have to pee, I think. And, of course, I didn't have to. This was my first tic I developed. But I was insistent enough, they'd stop the car, I'd stand out there, they figured I was just attention-seeking, they dragged me back in the car after about four or five times, you know, I got a smack on the bum for my efforts, and that was the first time I remember thinking, wow, there's something going on that is different from other people, and they aren't getting it. And from there, I developed some humming tics like this that, again, were seen as attention-seeking, particularly by my sister, thinking that I was trying to get under her skin. Eye blinking is another common tic, and it was one that I developed, a lot of exaggerated eye blinking to the point where you're almost grimacing. From there, I developed an arm tic, mm-hmm. where my arms would extend out, almost as if I was pulling my sleeves up. And in fact, that's how I explained it. A lot of people with Tourette's actually manage to somewhat camouflage themselves in that they can explain their movements that they figured out are bizarre in somewhat non-bizarre ways so that they can pass for normal and not be ostracized or have any of the awful things that their dreams are telling them will happen if people find out their secret happen.
You know, okay, so it's interesting because you mentioned it's a progressive kind of thing. I didn't realize that.
Well, tics tend to show up around the age of 6 to 7 initially, mm-hmm. and they will increase, on average, the research shows up until about age 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's anyone's guess. About a third of the people, they stay at the same level from 10 on. A third of the people, they'll decrease but still be there. And then the final third will remit completely. But yes, in general, these movements and these different noises that develop will increase for a few years there between age 6 to 7 to 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm. Now, how typical was what you experienced with what other people with Tourette's?
Well, fortunately, I'm becoming more and more of a dinosaur. I've really been privileged, I think, over the last 5 years or so to take part in a lot of the growing awareness mm-hmm. around Tourette's syndrome. And I'm on somewhat of a generational cusp, I would say, where people older than me were a lot older than me when they got diagnosed. And although my symptoms started coming out around typical time, around age 7, as you mentioned, I was 19 when I got diagnosed.
Yeah.
And so really those 12 years did a whole lot more damage, I've learned, retrospectively, than the disorder ever could have. But a lot of people younger than me now are getting diagnosed much younger.
Yeah.
Because of programs like this that help a lot.
So tell me what those 12 years were like then.
Well, I used to have what I called scream dreams. And literally they were that. I would go to sleep at night and in my dream someone would have found out my big secret, that I wasn't like anyone else. Anytime I would let out a little bit of a movement or a noise, I tended to get such an over-the-top reaction mm-hmm. that my 7-year-old mind did the math. Well, if I let a little bit out and I'm getting that big of a reaction, what would happen if I let it all out?
And was there a lot there that you wanted to let out?
Well, yeah, I was doing what was called suppressing. And it's like being covered with mosquito bites and not itching. That what's truly involuntary isn't the movement or the noise, it's the urge to engage in that movement or noise. And
yeah.
So fighting it, of course, then leads to a lot of other problems. Like if you're sitting in calculus class covered with poison ivy, not itching, obviously your attention's not going
to
be very good.
I'm just trying to imagine that. Yeah, that would drive you crazy.
Your nerves are going to be raw. It really did. And it makes you irritable and it can cause other associated conditions to get worse. But for me, anyway, holding all of that in my scream dreams, these nightmares where it played out that I actually let it all out. I was put in a straitjacket. I was locked in a padded room. They threw away the key, and the different people that I loved in my life would be berating me through the door for being a freak. And so, of course, there's nothing like sheer terror to help the whole fighting the neurology aspect. And so I would get up the next day as tense as a piano wire, that much more resolved that I wouldn't let anyone in on my secret.
So, okay, but I mean, like, your parents, you're with your family every day. At some point, they know that it's more than just attention seeking.
Well, one of the things, see, my and to add to this,
yeah,
unusual, it's hard to wrap your head around. My mom even was a nurse. And so, yeah, you think, wow, callous people that weren't understanding this or whatever. It's just people explain things based on what they know in their worlds. And at the time when my symptoms were first coming out, hardly anyone knew anything about Tourette syndrome. In her medical dictionary, she had like one sentence in it that said that they swear, which isn't very, it isn't accurate, but it's media friendly. I mean, very, very few have a swearing tick, but it's what gets blown up in the media oftentimes. But it's just that it could be explained in other ways. And because I was getting good at camouflaging this stuff, than it was. I would be seen at a table, for example, humming, and I would get grilled. I mean, they knew something was going on. They could see I was getting more and more depressed, but they just weren't quite sure what.
Yeah.
And really, I was my own worst enemy because I didn't let them in. I mean, one of the reasons that I do these presentations and I'm here today is because it's so important just to get the education out there, to demystify the disorder, and to get people comfortable in talking about it and fostering an environment and an atmosphere where you're okay with ticking, because once you do that, then the worst part of the disorder is behind you.
What happened at 19?
I read an Ann Landers article.
No way.
I did. And actually, I'm quite tickled because it's kind of come full circle. I've got that Ann Landers article now framed and on my wall of my office. But when Ann Landers passed away a couple of years ago, my website, I had put an obituary on, like a little bit of a eulogy, I suppose, on there. And I was contacted by Rick Kogan, who was the Chicago Tribune's editor for Ann Landers and a good friend of hers. He was writing a book about Ann Landers and had come across my website and wanted, as part of the legacy aspect of this book, to talk about my story. And so after all the good that Ann Landers did for me in terms of picking up that article and changing my life forever for the good, I could then turn around and kind of publicly take my hat off to her and applaud her and say, you know, rest well, ma'am.
So the article. So obviously, the Ann Landers article made reference to a syndrome that rang a bell with you.
Right.
So what did you do then?
Well, I read the article about three or four times, dropped the sandwich, dropped the jaw. Because I knew my mom had been a nurse, actually, I ran down the hallway and grabbed her medical dictionary off the shelf. I was alone at the time at home for lunch. One of the reasons I was probably able to suppress effectively, I suppose, is because you have to let it out at some point. But both of my parents worked long and unusual hours, and so it afforded me a lot of alone time in the house to have my rebound effects, where when you hold it in for a long period of time, just like with a mosquito bite, you give in later on and make up for lost time. And so anyway, I ran down and went through a medical dictionary, and I went back to school that afternoon with the article, and I told my three best friends. And that night I told my parents that I thought I had Tourette syndrome. And it started from there.
So it started from there. So we want to talk about why you're here this weekend, but I also want to find out. So
sure.
What did you do then?
Well, there was some skepticism at first from my parents, my family doctor. Oh, he doesn't have Tourette syndrome. Again, the public awareness at that point, even the medical awareness, was so low. And fortunately, that's improving now through organizations like the Tourette Syndrome Foundation of Canada doing mailings to physicians, to psychologists and such. But I knew. Like, there was a voice that just started screaming, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me, as soon as I saw the article. And so I went it alone for a while. I was in my last year of high school, and so I was about to go to a larger community, to university. And so I not only was taking psychology so I could pass all of this new information through a Tourette filter and learn to, you know, kind of doctor heal thyself type of notion, but also there were a lot of neurologists and psychologists and different professionals in Hamilton where I went and got myself diagnosed and began doing the sort of thing. And well, a couple years, 3-4 years later, my dad ended up in the back of one of my presentations. And a few years after that, my mom came into the back of the room on another presentation. And those were pretty important days for me.
Yeah, I betcha. Okay, what causes it?
It's neurological disorder. There's a chemical imbalance in the brain. They're still figuring out exactly what's going on. From the medical model side of things, what they've recognized is that there's a chemical in the brain that your brain's a little bit too sensitive to. And so that means a cascading number of neurological events that leads to the tics. From more a psychological point of view, like adding, you know, multidisciplinary looks at things, what I did my PhD thesis on actually was a learning model of Tourette's syndrome, where basically when you take that faulty neurology, what happens then, you combine that with learning experiences where if you walk through a doorway, for example, and blink at the same time, it's an incidental occurrence. It's serendipitous. Your brain realizes that was coincidental. I don't need to blink every time I walk through a doorway. My brain doesn't realize that. And so it's almost like, again, it's too sensitive to that chemical. It's sort of a hyperactive learner, my brain is. And so my model is called the incidental associations model of tic formation, where over many, many years, I have millions of these silly little associations where I blink walking through a door, I blink talking to you, I blink picking up my earphones. And over time, eventually those different associations become strong enough and there's enough of them that I'm blinking at seemingly random intervals, which we then call a tic.
Nobody's ever explained it to me like that before. That is so cool. Treatments then. I mean, because you talked about like chemical imbalances and things like that. I mean,
right.
For depression and other conditions now, there are drugs that can help even all that out. Does it work for Tourette's?
Yep. But just as with depression, you use the example, there are also cognitive behavioral techniques that work as well, if not better, than medication. Certainly in some situations, and they can be more cost effective. They can have more generalizable effects. So really, just because something has a neurological basis doesn't mean it necessarily has to be treated with meds. There are different medications that can be used, and they're a godsend for some. For others, such as myself, I made the personal choice that I wasn't going to take medications, and I get along pretty well using different cognitive behavioral strategies, psychological techniques that are available. For example, there's one called habit reversal training, that if you've got a particular tic that's causing you a lot of angst, that you can use a therapeutic technique to rid yourself of that tic.
But you're not doing what you did for those 12 years and trying to hold it in
no,
all together.
No, because that ultimately that causes more problems really than it solves. Which again is why I think it's pretty important that this sort of awareness happens. Because I'll go to a conference and you walk into a room full of Tourette's and you don't see a single tic, but by the end of the day couple heads shaking in the back and a couple snorts and whistles and you know you did a good day's work. That's the money bark.
Okay. So you're here this weekend and you're talking with people.
Tell
me a little bit about
what's
going on.
I'm actually here for 2 days. Today I'm talking largely with professionals and teachers that are taking time out of their busy schedules to come out. There's still room if anyone listening right now has time on their plate today and wants to come down. We're at the Valhalla Inn today. And the session's going from 9 to 3:30. Tomorrow it's a little bit more for families and friends and grandparents and spouses and a little bit more of a personal close look. That's going to be at the Victoria Park Training Center, which is at 125 Lilly Street here in Thunder Bay, and that one's going to run from 9 to 4. And again, we have plenty of space, so the more people I can infect, not with the disorder, but with knowledge, the better. So come on down.
And the enthusiasm and the positive outlook on life. I mean, this is incredible. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so glad you came in.
And actually, if I could just say one other thing.
Yes.
That actually is something that is just about as diagnostic of Tourette's syndrome as the tics are, that Tourette's is really about an amplification of self. Your movements and your noises are close to the surface, but so is your energy, so is your passion, so are your talents. And so really this disorder, it's tragic when we spend so much time suppressing and lamenting the negative, because there's so much positive you can run with. Once you're comfortable with it and you're accepting it and you're moving on, and your worst liability can become your greatest asset.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Duncan McKinley, Dr. Duncan McKinley, a psychologist with the a passion about Tourette's syndrome this morning. He's in Thunder Bay to speak with educators and families. And there is a local Tourette's syndrome service here in Thunder Bay. For information on that, you can call 475-7132. We're now at 2 minutes before the World Report at 8 o'clock.